He planned on the convoy giving a better accounting of itself, of actually aiding in the MAG attack. Instead, very little effective fire was being returned. They were all running. One of the raiders' wags disgorged a small knot of men while still moving. They ran immediately, taking long weapons cases with them that Kearney recognized. Targeting them, Kearney pulled the machine gun triggers. A double row of rounds stitched after the men, catching the last two and sending them spinning to the ground. The rest of the team was gone, vanishing behind a sand dune. Kearney leaned over to yell at his driver.
Volt, adjust course. I want to get that ground team.
Yes, sir.
Vogt brought the sand cat around sharply. Only the belt strapping him in place kept Kearney in his seat as they barreled after the unit moving on foot.
Carter, get the Deathbirds online in case we need them as backup.
Before Carter could comply, something flashed from the ground. It struck the lead Deathbird, exploding it into a ball of twisting, greedy flame. Before it could hit the ground, the second, then the third Deathbird also blew up.
Shit!
From the telltale explosions, Kearney knew the Raiders had come equipped with anti-aircraft weapons. The first real fear started to flood through him. The course of the battle was changing rapidly. The Raiders had come prepared for the MAG assault force. Somewhere in the Cobaltville ranks was a traitor. The Sandcat hurtled over a sand dune where the men had run. The treads caught one of them, chewing him into a bloody pulp as it rolled over. Kearney spun the Sandcat's turret, turning to face the ground squad. He opened up with the machine guns at once. The heavy rounds bored into the sandstone side of the hill where the Raiders had taken cover. Even as he struggled to bring his line of fire to bear, he saw one of the Raiders shoulder a rocket launcher. The Heatseeker jumped from the rocket launcher, twisting only slightly in the air to lock onto its target. The fourth Deathbird was a crumpled memory by the time Kearney found the range and blasted into the anti-aircraft unit. His rounds hammered one of the men to the ground, but the rest went to cover.
Bring the cat around!
Vogt hauled on the wheel hard, causing the Sandcat's treads to bite deeply into the loose sand. High overhead, the fifth Deathbird exploded.
God damn it! They've got to have more than one anti-aircraft unit out there!
Abruptly, one of the Raiders broke from cover. The MAG commander yanked the guns around, trying to lock on the man. Less than 50 yards out, the Raider threw himself prone, then slid a tube over his shoulder. He took deliberate aim at the Sandcat.
Incoming!
Shit!
Kearney's machine gun round smashed through the ground toward the man, leaving fist-sized pockmarks to mark their passage. The explosion erupted against the Sandcat's left rear tread, shaking the war wag. Kearney stared as the track flew loose, flapping like a multi-toothed monster against the armiglass hull. Although the rocket launcher warhead didn't actually penetrate the Sandcat's armiglass hull, the detonation, combined with the shattered tread, was enough to flip it twice. The impact slammed Kearney violently against the armiglass, smashing his lip and flooding his mouth with the taste of his own blood. Only the seat harness kept him in place as the Sandcat came to rest on its side.
Shieldmate leader to Shieldmate squadron. Leader is in need of assistance. I repeat, leader is in need of assistance!
Only white noise sounded in his ears. For the first time, he noticed that all of the comm channels had been jammed. Outside, the Raiders were running right for them.
Volt! Keep this vehicle locked down!
Yes, sir!
Volt hit the sec switches, locking all the Sandcat's doors tight.
Electrify the exterior!
The Sandcat had the ability to channel all the voltage from its onboard batteries through the insulated armiglass. Anyone who touched it would get electrocuted. Kearney waited, the small part of him that wasn't filled with fear relishing the moment the Raiders touched the war wag. Chances were good that the electricity might be able to get a couple of them. Then they'd see about organizing an escape. But the Raiders pulled up short of touching the Sandcat. They trained their weapons on the armiglass obslit facing the pilots and co-pilot seats. Normally, the obslit was proof against conventional rounds, but the Raiders had come equipped with armor-piercing rounds. They chipped through the obslit like a knife through cheese, blasting Vogt and Carter to death. At least two or three of the bullets slammed into Kearney's legs. They felt as if they'd caught fire and gone numb at the same time. From the Sandcat's position, he couldn't bring the USMG-73 to bear. He flexed his wrist, popping his sin eater into his hand. He brought it up to the obslit and fired rounds through the empty space, catching one of the Raiders in the side and knocking him away. Then a shadow filled the armiglass hull of the turret. Kearney looked up and saw the Raider holding an assault rifle pointed at him. The Raider checked his wrist, and Kearney caught a brief glimpse of the picture tucked into the plastic pocket lining of the Raider's flak vest.
Throw down your weapon and you get to live, Kearney!
The assault rifle's barrel never wavered. The MAG commander hesitated for only a few seconds before disengaging the Sin Eater and tossing it away. Pain flared through Kearney's legs. His guards had secured his hands behind his back with disposable mil-spec restraints. His fingers had already gone numb from the loss of circulation. Kearney noted how disciplined the troops which surrounded him were. Their uniforms bore three vertical bands, two of aqua and one of white, which covered each one from chest to crotch. There were women as well as men, their faces masked by polycarbonate helmets in a deeper shade of aqua.
Commander Kearney.
He stared at the woman who now stood before him. She had to be the tallest woman he'd ever seen in his life. At least 6 feet, maybe a couple of inches taller than that. Her Kevlar armor gleamed in the harsh sunlight, the deep, rich color reflective. It scooped up her breasts, revealing a lot of cleavage. The bottom half of the armor was fashioned like a skirt that barely dropped low enough to cover her sex. But it wasn't just for show, he saw, noting the bullet scars on the Kevlar's abdomen and over one breast. Surprisingly, there were no scars at all on her body, whose beauty he was in no condition to appreciate. He looked at her, more afraid than he'd ever been in his life. His throat was dry, and it was all he could do to keep from crying out from the pain in his wounded legs. He'd taken 4 hits, but none of them appeared to have broken bone.
Your wounds will be bound, then you'll be set free in a wag.
He didn't bother arguing that he wouldn't be fit to travel. If she was going to offer a wag and his life, he would go. Kearney flinched, but the woman never batted an eye.
I'm going to let you live to get a message back to Baron Cobalt. Do you understand?
Kearney just gazed at her, trying to maintain his dignity. She stepped closer, and for the first time, he got a look at her eyes. Hard, cold aqua gazed at him without any hint of weakness or sympathy.
You will speak when you're spoken to, or I'll take a finger off for each and every affront you offer me. You don't need fingers to take my message back.
I understand.
Good. My name is Ambika. Tell your precious Baron Cobalt that these territories in Utah are off limits to him. No trade from the mines will be carried east anymore. My men will inform the mining communities. Once they hear of the massacre that took place today, they will no longer trade with Cobaltville, unless they want to die. And I will have them put to death. Any magistrate forces that attempt to infiltrate this territory in the future will be immediately eliminated. Inform those in the magistrate division when you get back to Cobaltville.
I will.
Tell them that I've declared a special war against those who wear the black armor of magistrates and who seek to do Baron Cobalt's bidding.